This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And still to come on today's program, Gary Galley stops by. We'll talk about the Boston Bruins and the Florida Panthers game one tonight. Watch that on CBC and Sportsnet starting at 8 o'clock Eastern. And we'll bring you more from closeout here in Toronto. We are standing by for head coach Sheldon Keefe. When he speaks, we will bring that to you ASAP. Also, speaking of coaching notes, interesting, Elliot mentioning off the top of the show, everything in Ottawa seems to be trending towards the direction of Travis Green. So we will stand by and see what happens there. And then what the fallout is once that domino falls, what happens with the New Jersey Devils, and should the Maple Leafs make a decision on Sheldon Keefe, does he then perhaps go to the front of the line in New Jersey? We shall see. But sticking with coaching, and we'll start here with Murph. Dan Murphy, our ringside host for NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada, joins me now. Murph, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Jeff. How are you?
Good, man. Pleasure to have you aboard. Before we get to the Vancouver Canucks, and if Pooh Suter doesn't score that goal, are we still playing that game right now?
Yes.
Let me get you, probably. I mean, it was trending that direction, Murph. You're right. Thought on Rick Bowness. You know, I was mentioning off the top of the show, one of my favorite stories, anecdotes about Rick was, you know, all the work that he did when he was with Tampa with Victor Hedman, a player who was always suspicious of never met a coach he wasn't suspicious of, was hard, you know, hard player to get through to. And, you know, Rick went out of his way, out the door, around the block to try to get to the person first and the player second. When I say Rick Bowness, and you would have had many encounters with him, what comes to your mind, Murph?
I'll say this. I never left a conversation with him without a smile on my face is one thing.
Yeah.
Just an upbeat guy. And I'm sure some players will say he could be tough on them. But as a member of the media, I don't think I ever had a bad interaction with him. You never left a conversation with him, you know, not feeling good about yourself. You know, that's just the way he was. You know, and he was just a really, really nice guy. Like the players in Vancouver for 7 years here, the guys like Bieksa and Edler, you know, yeah, speak in reverence about him, right?
Yep.
And just a fun man. And I have a quick story, and I believe it was probably 2010 in Chicago, you know, second of the third three straight series against Chicago. And it's, I think it was the night before a game, and we're at Pippin's, a legendary Irish tavern around from where our hotel was. And it was probably 11 at night, and we're having some beers in there. And Nolan Baumgartner, who I'm not going to say he was a black ace, but he was an extra.
Yeah.
And probably not going to play the next day, or for sure wasn't going to play the next day. I think he played one game that round. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he's sitting there with myself, and I can't tell you who else, maybe Mike Bradley, and we're having some beers. And we see Bones walking outside and getting ready to come in. So Bomber does the quick duck and shuffle to, you know, get around the other side of the bar to get out the door, right? Because he knew I wasn't playing, but they're still probably, you know, didn't want to be seen having beers. So Bones comes in and sees us and goes to the bar and grabs around for everybody and comes and sits down and, you know, casually has, you know, about half his beer. And once he's done half his beer, he goes, you can text Bomber, tell him to come back. I saw him.
So,
I'm really going to miss conversation with him because he's just a super, super great human.
I always learn something from him. That's my main takeaway. Whenever I talk to Bones, like, you come away understanding the game a little bit more, or where he's coming from a little bit more, or coaching a little bit more. He was just someone that, first of all, loved conversation, loved people. I mean, shocking where he's coming from. He's a people person. Murph, I always felt like I learned something about the game that I didn't know until I talked to him. And he was like, I'll tell you, at the All-Star break, Elliot and I sat down with both him and Rick Tocchet at the same time. And it's one of the most fascinating conversations I've ever been part of. I don't think Elliot and I said more than maybe two words, but just hearing Rick Bowness and Rick Tocchet talk to each other and just the sort of, you know, the reverence.
The
conversation is fantastic. I mean, you've been around tables of hockey players and you know the nature of that conversation. I'm sure you've also been around tables of coaches. Those conversations are fascinating, Murph. And that's like, that really is a spot where someone like Rick Bowness would shine.
Yeah. Decades and decades and decades of stories. And it's true. And just, as you mentioned, like even earlier this year when the Oilers were in town and, you know, I think it was Paul Coffey downstairs and he catches up with Rick Tocchet. And then they just start telling stories and incorporating us. Oh, can you believe this guy did this? And oh yeah, but I remember when you did that. And you know, so it's just they love telling those stories over and over to each other and including you in them. And that's the best part.
And wasn't exactly a secret that Tocchet's Flyers and Coffey's Oilers did not exactly like each other at any point while they were playing. Anyhow, okay. Vancouver Canucks, before we get into the series here against the Edmonton Oilers, your thoughts on what that series against the Nashville Predators did for the Vancouver Canucks? Like, I look at what the Vancouver Canucks went through in that series and said, that is a net bonus for the Vancouver Canucks. Maybe the worst thing that could have happened to Vancouver was a four-game sweep or a steamrolling of the Nashville Predators. The fact that they were stretched the way that they were, considering this is a team that's, listen, this is their first kick at the playoffs and sort of under Rick Tocchet and under this composition, that can only be seen as a plus. How did you see the Nashville series?
Yeah, and we got to remember, like, if you include Artur Shilov in this, there's 10 guys that had never experienced a true NHL playoff game, right? I mean, the guys that played in the bubble, Quinn Hughes and Demko and Pettersson, but you know, let's be honest, that's not a real playoff atmosphere. Yep. That's not feeling the momentum and the emotion from the crowd. So I think they handled themselves pretty well. Now, I'll say this, like, this team, you know, that they're, I guess they're, you know, every team comes up with a phrase in the playoffs. There's this resilience. And I'll just say that the playoffs kind of did the same thing as the regular season. You remember going into the season, nobody picked them to make the playoffs, or if they did, you know, maybe they'll be a wild card. Heck, their president, Jim Rutherford, said, if everything goes right, we're a playoff team. They come out of the gates on fire. Then they hit a little rough patch, 500 for about 2 weeks, and everybody goes, okay, here they're going to drop off. Well, they didn't. In fact, they were the last team in the league to lose 3 straight games. Then, you know, then you get Edmonton charging at the end. Oh, they're going to blow the division. Mm-hmm. They beat Edmonton in game 80, and they win the division. And then you get to game one of the playoffs, and you win it, and uh-oh, Demko's hurt. And you lose game two. And then you get to game three, and oh, Casey Dismiss hurt, right? And you lose game five. And so for every chance that there was for this team to teeter or kind of fall to the narrative that they, you know, they couldn't handle or they weren't that good, they kind of stepped up to it. But, I don't think they were ever going to steamroll anyone in the first round. But I think they kind of showed the kind of team that they actually are. I know they scored a ton of goals, especially early. But this is a team that's based off defense and goaltending. And if they're going to have any chance to beat Edmonton, it's going to have to be next level.
You know, let me this is going to be a long-winded setup here. So bear with me, Murph.
Yeah.
I can recall having a conversation with an agent at the CHL-NHL Top Prospects game when it was in Kelowna years and years ago. And it was after the game, and we're in the bar, and I'm talking to this agent, and I'm saying, like, you know, one of the interesting things I find about you, Agent X, is I've never heard complaints about any of your players. Like, every agent has, like, okay, this guy's a headache, this guy's a handful, this is blah, 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 blah. He goes, all your guys, like, they're just solid, stand-up, not just hockey players, but people, too. And he said, yes, that is very deliberate. I have a recruiting system called the 2S rule. And I said, what's the 2S rule? He goes, I only recruit from the two lowest maintenance places in the world. It's the 2S rule. I only recruit from Sweden and Saskatchewan. That's it. That's where the low maintenance people exist and everybody adores them. Can we amend that and say, I want to throw Latvia in there as well. And I want to get the Shilovs. I've long maintained that Latvian hockey fans may be the best on the face of the earth. If they win, they're happy. If they lose, well, they're happy too. Fans are just great. They go and they sing and they drink and they have fun and the players are wonderful and they're developing and getting better and better and the country's improving as a hockey nation. And it warms my heart to see what is happening with Artur Shilov and the Vancouver Canucks. A long-winded way for me to ask you, what do you think of this phenomenon, Murph?
Well, I mean, we got to know him a little bit. He played 5 games last season and then another, I think, 4 this season before the playoffs. You know, when you have those interactions, you know, you'd speak to him, but he's, you know, he's fairly quiet and, you know, very calm and, you know, you see him in moments. But now he's become a little more vocal. And I'm not going to say he's stepping up and speaking, but when you talk to him now, he knows that he's the number one goaltender as of this moment. And he's embracing the moment. He's not afraid of the moment. He's 23 years old. Even when he was getting the start in game number 5, or 4, he said, okay, I guess it's my time to shine. Mm-hmm. But he didn't shrink. And, you know, he played 4, 5, and 6. In game 6, he played when Casey DeSmith was healthy. So that was a conversation probably between Rick Tocchet and Ian Clark. And they felt that it was his net to lose now. And so I just think the young man's handled himself extremely well. You know, I don't know if he brought into the group, but I mean, he said that these moments is how you grow and bond together. Mm-hmm. JT Miller said, I haven't seen him around a lot because, you know, Ian Clark's got him in a chokehold, but I think that when they have the pink shirt and then it just allows him to be more part of a team. And, he's handled himself very well. And I do think that the World Championships last May really helped set him up for this moment. That was at home, tons of pressure. And he was the MVP of that that tournament, winning Latvia's first ever medal. So, you know, he does have some chops, but despite the fact this is his first playoff performance in the NHL.
Speaking of MVPs, is Ian Clark the low-key MVP of this team, goalie coach here?
I don't think there's any question. You know, to have three goaltenders win a game in that series, you know, I kind of joked before, you know, game number five that I wouldn't be surprised if Nikita Tolopilo gets the start tonight, right? He's back up with the team. So it's amazing what he's done with these guys. He can be hard on them, critical with them. I hear them sometimes speaking to them, but also he prepares them. And I think that's the biggest compliment as a guy is when they go in the net, they're ready for the moment.
There is only one player, Murph, in the NHL right now who has played a playoff game for the Buffalo Sabres. That player's name is Tyler Myers. Yeah. And I've seen players dive in front of shots before to save games, but not quite like that. do you, getting him in the part that is most a man, Murph, the part that is most a man, do you have a thought on Tyler Myers the first round?
Yeah, I mean, well, for Chris Tanev dives with his face, and I guess Myers is diving with the face of the family franchise. But, you know, I'm so happy for him because, you know, he has been a bit of a whipping boy in this market for, you know, the duration of a six-year contract. I think he's in an environment now where there's structure, where, you know, he's got dependable teammates. And he has played exceptionally well. Like, he has been one of the most consistent defenders, and he's getting some praise from the market now. Like, his nickname is the Chaos Giraffe, as you know, right? He can be a chaos of, you know, good and a chaos of bad. But this year, it's been almost exclusively good. And he had a real tough moment early. I think it was the loss in Philly, and then they went and lost in Tampa. And he had made a bonehead play in both, and the market was ready to, you know, to set him free. And he responded well. And, you know, he's earned himself another contract. I don't know if he's going to be here. It might be too expensive. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, it's amazing that when you put guys in the right system and defense first and you give them, you know, NHL caliber, you know, defense partners. And let's be honest here, there's four new guys here this year that weren't here last year. Mm-hmm. It's just great to see because I think he deserves some love after, you know, really standing up to all the criticism over the last 4 or 5 years and handling it head on like he usually does. But now he's getting to answer questions about great performances and not poor ones.
Let me close on this one. I watched the Vancouver Canucks like everybody else, and I say to myself, okay, this is not Quinn Hughes at 100%. This is not Filip Hronek at 100%. This is not Elias Pettersson at 100%. I know playoffs, everybody plays hurt. Many players play injured. When you look around that team, look around that room, how often are you saying he's not 100% or anywhere close to it?
Well, I mean, I think Hughes, you know, I don't think he went into the last series with anything bothering him, just, you know, regular wear and tear of a long season. And Nashville didn't help that. But he sure looked good yesterday and happy to speak to us. I know Hronek was dealing with some sort of arm issue late in the season. I don't think he's dealing with that now. And as for Pettersson, you know, it's the usual bumps and bruises, I believe, as most players are. For him, I think for him, it's just a crisis of confidence. And now he gets to set, you know, the slate clean for another round of the playoffs. He played a big part in that game-winning goal in Game 6, won the wall battle, got it to Besser, got it to Suter. So we'll see what he can do, because I really think that Pettersson, if the Canucks are to have a chance, if you look at the way it sets up now, Miller's probably getting McDavid. Lindholm's probably getting Draisaitl. So that means that it's going to be Pettersson versus McLeod, I guess. And there is a mismatch. So if you can kind of hope for a somewhat wash in the top six, Pettersson could be a real big difference maker for this team. So I think for him, it's always been, there's been ebbs and flows of confidence. And I think Rick Tocchet's really working with him. And, you know, I hope he's ready to come out and not worry about the first round now, because he can change the narrative with one or two games here in round two.
He seems to be rested. We won't see it until Wednesday. Murph, thanks so much for sharing Bone stories and your thoughts on this series coming up. Always appreciate it, pal.
All right, Jeff. We'll catch up soon.
There he is, Dan Murphy, our ringside host for the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Matt Marchese returns. Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. Of the one game on the board this evening, which one interests you the most?
It has to be the Bruins and the Panthers, right? It has to be.
Bruins are going on fumes here, right?
They are.
Like this is a quick turnaround.
Yeah.
Although I think if Boston would have won that game, was it Thursday against the Maple Leafs, I think they would have been playing this game on Saturday.
Probably, yeah. And I mean, ask Matthew Tkachuk how happy he was that that one went seven, and he expected the Bruins. Panthers -1.5 in this one. So Boston won all four matchups this season, 3-2, 4-3, 3-1, 3-2. Two games went past regulation time. In last year's playoff series between these two, five of the seven games hit the over. Some injury and personal news and notes. Sam Bennett, update? He's not ready yet, but he's close, according
to
Paul Murray.
More Sam Bennett updates. You know how I love my Sam Bennett updates.
And Brandon Carlo welcomed a new member to his family, a baby boy. And Jim Montgomery is hopeful that he'll be back for tonight's game.
Do we know about the goaltender yet for the Boston Bruins?
This can't be a thing, right? It can't be. We can't be doing this now.
I wonder if they put Linus Ullmark in there tonight.
Yikes.
I really do. And not that it's because it's the scheduled win for the Florida Panthers, but it kind of might be. If there's going to be one game we look at and you go like, oh man, this one is set up tough for the Boston Bruins, it's this one.
Yeah, I can see that. I understand it. But at the same time, if there's a player on Boston that's going to make or break or potentially steal the series, it's Jeremy Swayman.
You know, I look at the series and I say to myself, like, look how things have flipped inside of 1 year. Like, make no mistake about that, Boston Bruins is still a very good team, but it is all still very completely different between these two. Last year, it was the Florida Panthers facing off against the Boston Bruins, who just, you know, rewrote the regular season rule record book. And all of a sudden now, what are we talking about? The Florida Panthers are a machine. The Florida Panthers do not know how to lose. The Florida Panthers are well-rested because they just picked apart the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
And the balance of power in that state has now shifted. And it's probably going to be on the Florida Panthers side for a while. Like, how differently now are we talking about these two teams meeting? Last year was in the opening round, and we thought, okay, Boston in three.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Florida Panthers just barely made their way in. But as you've pointed out, 2 years ago, before that, they were the President's Trophy winners. But now, all of a sudden, are we not talking about the Florida Panthers the way we talked about the Boston Bruins last season?
That they should win it in three.
That they should win it in
100%.
Three.
100%. And what the thing is, if I don't think a lot of people, I mean, the Leafs weren't at 100%. We know that. A lot of teams aren't. But, you know, not having Austin Matthews for chunks of the series, not having William Nylander, and you'd think Boston should roll right through them. And they didn't. And now you look at Florida, well-rested against the Bruins who, let's face it, they're still banged up. That was a tough series.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy, this is tough sledding.
Well-rested, tough, healed up, disciplined.
And nasty.
Elite at every position and nasty.
Yeah, have fun. That's not fun.
Tune in tonight. Game one between these two.
We really sold it.
All right. That's Line Change presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. On the other side, we are standing by to hear from Toronto Maple Leafs head coach Sheldon Keefe. Also, Gary Galley stops by. More on, well, this series, which you can watch tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern on CBC and Sportsnet, the Florida Panthers and the Boston Bruins. Quick break. From Eric Show back across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sportsnet 360 and wherever you get your podcasts in moments. Keep it here.
In-depth Blue Jays coverage with an analytical twist. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Standing by for Maple Leafs head coach Sheldon Keefe. Some interesting comments have been made so far in Maple Leafs closeout day. Perhaps most notable, Mitch Marner saying, we're looked at as gods here.
I don't know how well that's going to go over. Hey, Maddie.
Yeah, that was...
I don't know how well that's going to go over.
Insert foot in mouth.
Thing is, he's not wrong.
Oh, I wonder if that narrative has changed.
It sounds awkward, but the thing is, you look at how the players are treated in Toronto.
Yeah, I get it. And here's the thing. I, I still, to this moment in my life, do not understand why. Because they don't win anything.
Literally. Hey, like, you know what I wanted to ask you?
Sure.
I got tweets about this.
Uh-oh.
Did you let your daughter wear her jersey on Saturday?
Nope.
Can that be over now?
Yeah. It's funny that you say that because when I came up here today, I was walking around the corner to where we set up for the show. And I was just like,
you're the worst.
I was like, probably should have just let her wear it.
Yeah, that's right, Maddie. You probably
You live should've. And you learn as a parent.
But everybody told you.
Yeah, but
like you just refused to learn.
Jeff, you can't fix stupid. You can't fix stupid. I mean, at this point, right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It was, yeah, it is what it is.
All right. Anything else newsworthy out there? Do we have anything on the Boston goalie situation yet for tonight?
Okay, so I don't think I've ever been more confused in my life. So Jeremy Swayman was the first off at the morning skate today.
Okay.
And that from Fluto Shinzawa. And then he's appearing on the Pat McAfee show at some point today.
Okay.
Which is very rare for a player to be doing that.
Especially a goaltender. First of all, was this recorded
yesterday? That's what we don't know. And that may be the case.
If it's live, first of all, good on him for doing it. I'm surprised. And listen, the McAfee show has been a friend to hockey.
And it's a big one.
Real
down where,
friend to hockey. And that's a good one to have as a friend to hockey. But if it is live and he's doing it live instead of nap time.
Yeah. That doesn't seem like something a goalie would do.
I don't know, man. You know, I like Jeremy Swayman a lot. He's a different guy. I mean, you can make the case that
I was gonna say all goalies.
They used to be more different. Yeah, like, once upon a time, like they used to be like really different. Now goaltenders just kind of blend.
With a cat on his mask.
You know how Julie Gratton. There used to be a time where when it came to netminders, like if you stood a whole team up against the wall, you could look at the whole team and say, okay, that's your goaltender.
You found them.
Or
yeah.
these two are your goalies. Mm-hmm. Now
no, I would agree with that.
Not so much.
I would be stunned if it wasn't taped. I would be stunned.
I would be pleasantly surprised if it wasn't
taped. Okay, but hold on, though. Do you think that regardless of, and I know it's on ESPN and I understand all that, do you think that the PR department would even entertain the idea of a game day interview? Because I don't.
Who, the Boston Bruins?
Yeah, I do not.
Kind of a big show, bud.
I know, but call me.
Stanley Cup play. I understand what you're saying, but we have. But that's the thing, though. Like we have this. We have this preconceived notion that these precious little darlings can't talk on the radio in the afternoon before a game.
Oh, I agree that that's ridiculous.
Oh, these sensitive, 100%. Fragile little dolls might break or crush. If they, where's my fainting couch, have to do a radio hit to help promote a game.
Yep. Is that game even on ESPN tonight?
Here's the thing about Swayman. So I've talked to him a couple of different times for the podcast. He's a really intriguing guy. He's a fascinating dude. And I think it was the last conversation we had with him when he was at college. Do you know what he studied to help his goaltending?
Was that ballet?
Ballet.
Yeah.
He was that guy.
Yeah.
Where once upon a time, the guy's like, shh, don't say anything. I'm doing yoga, but don't tell anybody. It's good for my game. It's good for my health.
Yeah.
Here's a guy's out there doing ballet.
At least he went, at least he took a course that mattered. Not like some athletes in other sports where it's like, yeah, there was a quarterback in the NFL.
Yes.
He took ballroom dancing. Because
I wish
just,
that was offered when I went to Guelph.
Yeah,
oh.
Underwater basket weaving.
I would have taken that.
By the way, the game is on ESPN tonight. So.
Okay, so there you go. So that's part of it. Like, listen, there are first of all, if that's the New York Islanders who are playing the Florida Panthers tonight, is Lou Lamoriello letting either one of his goaltenders do that interview?
Lou Lamoriello didn't want to go on The Sopranos because he thought it would make him look bad. There's no way that he's having anyone do an interview on a game day. He doesn't even let them grow facial hair unless it's the playoffs. This is not happening.
This is if this is live, and they're making this decision to do this, and he's going on live. Good for them.
Well, let's see what Pat McAfee's wearing, and then if he's wearing it, and I mean that's a
big sleeveless Pat.
Yeah, no, he's not sleeveless today. I don't think.
Ah, it's disappointing.
Yeah,
the gun show.
We should ask Frege what it's like to be on such a big show.
He went on sleeveless last time.
Freege did. Oh yeah, he did.
Cut the sleeves off. We were telling me and Dom are the 32 Thoughts producer. He's like, yeah, I'm going on McAfee tomorrow. Like, dude, you gotta lose the sleeves. You gotta be big sleeveless Elliot for this one.
That would
so proud.
That is
so
very proud good. Of our yeah, guy. Yeah, good for Elliot. By the way, we still await Sheldon Keefe.
That's what we're waiting for here. One game on the go.
Never on NHL. Time.
That's okay.
I know it's fine.
It's closed out there. I don't think they're doing anything. Oh, well, you know what? The guys on the Sportsnet Radio Network really need us at 105 sharp.
No, they don't care. No, I know they don't care about us. Believe me, I've done this. I've been doing this job for over 12 years now.
What did you take? I mean, outside of Maple Leaf land here, I know that was a disappointment mm-hmm. for you on Saturday. What did you take away from the weekend as far as big stories go?
I still don't trust Freddie Anderson.
Just because of the Panarin goal.
But I don't trust him, period. I mean, there's 19 shots.
Been really good this year. Been really good this playoffs.
But
you're just waiting.
But you're just waiting. You're just waiting. I think we see Kochetkov before the series is done.
I don't disagree. I just don't know if it's only because of that. Like, when I watched Panarin score that goal yesterday afternoon, I thought to myself, ooh, Maple Leafs fans have seen that a lot, and they're looking at that going like, oh, yeah, I remember that one. But I remember thinking to myself, is that going to be enough for Rod Brind'Amour to pull him in game two and give it to Kochetkov and go there that early?
No, not yet. But if they go down two bagel,
I could,
and I don't, and it's, again, this is not all on Freddie Anderson. The Rangers are a really good team.
Yeah.
The Rangers are slightly more rested.
Here's one. Speaking of the Rangers, Ellie and I talked about this on the pod. Curious your thoughts on this one. If you're Peter Laviolette,
mm-hmm.
who is, try to think, I'm going to try to say this diplomatically.
Okay.
Not getting any Christmas cards from NHL officials anytime soon.
No. That's fine.
What's your decision game two on Matt Rempe? Now, here's why. If you look at that penalty where he's pushed into Freddie Anderson,
mm-hmm.
that's a penalty because he's
Matt Rempe. Yes. And he's big.
That is reputation call.
Sure.
And the officials have had it with Matt Rempe, it very much appears. And anything that even looks borderline, he's sitting down.
Mm-hmm.
Your decision on Matt Rempe, if you're Peter Laviolette, also consider that was a nasty game one.
Mm-hmm.
That was like good, vicious, like angry hockey.
We like violent hockey.
Between these two teams.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, you're Peter Laviolette and you don't want to disarm.
Yeah.
By any stretch. On the other hand, you also don't want a guy who's going to be guaranteed at least one penalty every game.
So I'm keeping him in the lineup. Also, and part of the reason is, even if it was as violent, if the Rangers' penalty kill wasn't as good as it has been, then I wouldn't play him.
There's but only so long you can tempt fate, though. Especially a team like the Carolina Hurricanes. How many different ways can that team absolutely smash you?
Yeah.
Whether it's Gensel, whether it's Aho, whether it's Natchez, like that team can just destroy you.
I just think that Matt Rempe offers something that whoever's coming into the lineup, I mean, unless it's Phil Pietl, that might be a different story, but Matt Rempe just offers something that nobody else is offering.
True, but what if you know that you're probably going to have to kill at least one penalty because he's in there?
I think I'm taking that. At least for game two, I'm taking that chance. Also, because I'm up 1-0.
But you're at home.
Sure. I'm taking that chance.
Okay. I know we're both talking here from the back seat. Neither one of us have a hand on the wheel, and it's easy to say, no, leave Rempe in there. Because, listen, I'm a media member. I want to see Matt Rempe in there. You're the same way.
Yeah.
But chaos. If you're Peter Laviolette and you're worried about winning a series against the Carolina Hurricanes. And by the way, that game, as much as we'll talk about Mika Zibanejad, and he had a tremendous game, and oh, the Rangers power play, how awesome it was, and it really was. That game was closer than a lot of people are treating it. Like Nature scores, it's a one goal game. Seth Jarvis scores, it's a one goal game. Like they never really went away. And if to your original point about Freddie Anderson, if he squeezes that Artemi Panarin shot, if he squeezes his arm, we're in overtime.
Yeah. It's a good point. This series should be close. I said it last week, like they're as evenly matched as it gets in this round right now. Mm-hmm. You look at Boston and Florida, you see the mismatch. Vancouver and Edmonton is kind of sort of close. And then I look at Colorado and Dallas. Uh-huh. That one's really close. But these two teams, I don't know. It's hard to pick between the two of them.
Yeah.
And so I think just the slight edge probably to the Rangers because I trust Igor Shesterkin even a little bit more. But yeah. He's had his moments this year too.
Sure.
So that's where I just think this is so
balanced.
Could
you not make the argument that of all the goalies remaining, he's the best right now? Now, the bigger ones, we have to throw Ottinger into that mix. For sure, and Ottinger outside of game one for Dallas has been really good.
Yeah.
Sergei Bobrovsky, that story is well told. Jeremy Swayman was great against the Toronto Maple Leafs, but
that's a tough one.
Is Shesterkin the best remaining goaltender of all of them?
Talent-wise, I think yes.
Yeah.
But putting it together and in the big moments, boy, oh boy, it's really hard to bet against Jake Ottinger right now.
Jake Ottinger. It's
like he's been so good. And after game one, we were all like, oh boy,
yeah.
The worries are real. And now you look and go, wow, Jake Ottinger, money goalie. Who would have thought?
You know what I like about the Rangers and Carolina Hurricanes?
What's that?
This is like stupid, frivolous, dumb quote by me, but I don't care.
It's got to be a jersey thing.
No, red pants.
That. Oh, jeez.
Two teams with red pants, bud.
Like, why am I not surprised by this?
You didn't notice that right away? I was like, hey, two teams with red pants.
No,
let's go.
I didn't.
Not for a second.
I didn't even think about it. No. Oh, it looks like we have
Sheldon Keefe's going to bail you out of my red pants conversation. Yep, here's Toronto Maple Leafs head coach, Sheldon Keefe, at the podium.
As a head coach, I take responsibility for that. You have a team that has expectations and has goals in mind, and you don't reach them, it's not a good feeling. My job as a head coach is to find solutions and chart a path ahead for the group to come through and to succeed at the most important time of year. And we haven't done that. I do feel we've, a year ago, took a step in the right direction as a group. I love the resolve that we showed in this series, game 5 and 6 in particular, to give us a chance to compete in game 7. But clearly that's not enough, and that sits with me. With that, I'll take questions.
Sheldon, a bit of a different one here, but on a day like today when it's, I presume, exit meetings with players and coaches, what is the advantage of that? Like, what do you learn? What do you glean? What's the value in all these meetings?
I think each season is different, and I've gone about it different ways in different seasons. A lot of times you take the direction of the general manager on how they want to handle it. You know, in the past, I've done it with the general manager. I've done it separately. At times I haven't done it. This season in particular, Tree gave me the option to have meetings with players. In the past, his coaches haven't. I elected to not have them today for myself personally. I went more with more casual interactions around the facility here today and seeing guys off and sort of opening the door for more meaningful conversations in the off season, which to me is really what it's about. These ones, I think, because the season ends so quickly, there's not a lot of value that you get out of the exit meetings. From the general manager's perspective, it's more so about giving direction on off-season and training and what's going to happen, all those sorts of things. So, you know, I think it's more of a formality that a lot of teams do, but for me, it's more just kind of feeling your way through. I spoke with the team after the game, after the loss the other night, more so than I have in any season in the past, and let them know how I felt about the team and about the group. But this is as I said earlier, and as I opened with, not a good day, and not a lot of productive things get done today. You know, the chance to see the guys off and you know, like I said, open the door for more meaningful discussions later on.
Sheldon, do you see any through line between the lack of the offense, playoffs after playoffs, or is it individual series?
The way you opened the question,
do you
I missed
see any
it.
Through line with the lack of offense, playoff after playoff, year after year?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things with it. You know, we look at this a lot, and you know, it's still fresh, and things happen quick. But you reflect on it and discuss it. You know, I think in each of those playoffs, you look at some of the opportunities missed, and you wonder why. Times when, you know, clean chances, breakaways, two-on-ones, you know, rebounds in tight, those types of things that tend to go in for you in the regular season, and now they're not. I think as a coach, it's more so how can you help your players through that, but also how can you generate more of it. You know, I don't think we generated enough of those, certainly more than what we did and what we executed on. But, you know, again, this season we face a goaltender at the other end that is, you know, is putting up top numbers in the league. And, of course, that's part on the goaltender and the team that you're playing against and the job that they do defensively. You know, but my job as a coach is to find more ways to get through to that.
Sheldon, you had mentioned on Saturday night that the opponent will set up games for the Leafs to beat themselves, games 3 and 4 in this series. What has made it challenging to counter that?
Well, I think first off, in that comment that I made, it's what I'm talking about is a team that basically sits back in structure and forces you to come through them and waiting for you to make mistakes and force the issue and force the game and be impatient. I think that's a common theme and strategy around the league, is to be able to capitalize and play in transition and limit mistakes. So I don't think we're unique in that sense in terms of how teams game plan against us, but certainly, you know, the ways to counter it for me are things that we discussed all series, you know, getting through the neutral zone quickly before structure is set, capitalizing on line changes and progressions and sequencing, things that allow you to play when you're not against structure. And then when we are, finding ways to charge through it and get through that, get through the neutral zone, get to the net, get to the off, you know, spend time in the offensive zone, but get on the inside, you know. And I thought as the series wore on, not just in our series, but even if you look around the league, you know, the later the series have gone on, offense seems to be harder to come by. Early in the series, we had no issues with that. We were generating lots. We were leading the league in inter-slot shots and rebounds, and we were getting lots of pucks in there in the first few games of the series. You know, those dried up later on in the series, yet we were also playing way better defensively ourselves and didn't necessarily need as much offense to win games. You know, game 5 and 6 as examples. You know, I think the level of patience that we showed in those games is ultimately what it takes to win in the playoffs. And that's, to me, you know, is why it's most disappointing to not get it done in game 7, because again, we're right there. You're one shot away from getting through. And then quickly the narrative changes to now the Leafs have figured out how to play tight games, win tight games, you know, come from behind, show fight, all these sorts of things that you're excited about. I come out of game 6 feeling about as, you know, as good about the Toronto Maple Leafs as I felt in this position. And that was because of how we were playing and how the group had come together. So, you know, to not get it done in game 7 is quite disappointing. But, you know, in terms of the strategy itself, I think, you know, the line that I talked to the players about is it takes what it takes. You know, and you know, we've got a group of 20 players that, when committed to playing as a group, can have success. And, you know, we have to be able to stick with that and trust that for the long haul.
Sheldon, can appreciate you saying that you take responsibility for what happened. I'm just wondering, what form does that take next? What happens next for you?
Well, for me, it's looking for solutions. Continuing to work, build upon the things that I just discussed. You know, to me, this series that we just finished is as I'm saying here, the most that or the best that I felt about our group in terms of its ability to perform and come through in playoffs and play a playoff type of game. I think different parts here and there in previous years, we've done that. We obviously found a way to win a series last year, but there was a lot about our process when we won that series against Tampa that wasn't great. But we came up big in big moments. We won overtime games. We tied games late. Special teams were good. Like, lots of things like that that helped us through that series. But in terms of our process and our buy-in, the physicality, the defending, the patience that we showed throughout this series, that's to me is the recipe. And again, it takes what it takes. And I again feel like our group took big steps in that direction, and that's something for us to build upon while also continuing to search for solutions both at 5-on-5 and on special teams.
Morgan Riley was saying how bad he feels for being on the ice for Pasternak's series-ending goal. From your perspective, where did the breakdown or breakdowns happen that led to that goal?
Well, obviously, first off, I haven't spent a tremendous amount of time going through it. I have seen it, but when it's over, it doesn't do a lot of good. I'm not going to change anything here in these short days, but. Obviously we get their best player flying through the neutral zone and we don't pick him up coming through. So that's a challenge. And, it's a tough one because I actually thought we had done a tremendous job through the neutral zone in defending with structure through the series. Games 5 and 6 in particular, I thought was probably the best that we've been all season long in that regard. And on that one, we didn't pick it up and got a tough bounce and didn't get a save.
Sheldon, given your the opening remarks were strong, what is your level of expectation that you will have an opportunity to see this year next season?
Sorry, Terry, I couldn't hear end of your question.
Yeah, your opening statements were quite strong about not moving on and everything, your responsibility. To what level of expectation do you have that you will get a chance to see this through next season or have another kick at it?
So, I'm in the coaching business, and when you're in the coaching business, you don't get to make decisions about your position. So for me, it's out of my control. My job is to find solutions and help direct and create a path for our team to continue to move forward, and that's my focus. I understand that ownership and management, they make those types of decisions. And I accept responsibility for not meeting results. I believe in myself greatly. I love coaching the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now more than ever, I believe in myself and our team, and that I will win and our team will win. I've been through a lot, as a coach in my career, and to get to this level, and I've won a lot, before coming here. And the path always looks different, but you learn along the way, and I've learned a lot through my experience, and I know I'm in a good place. That decision's out of my control. My job is to continue to work to find solutions and continue to improve as a coach, and then at the same time, take accountability for the fact that we haven't met expectations. And decisions like you're alluding to are out of my control, but I certainly would like the attention and focus to be on me, because as the head coach, you're the leader, and you got to be accountable when you don't meet expectations.
Yeah, Sheldon, what, obviously the other team's goalie and penalty kill has a lot to do with it, but just the way that your power play, I think in February was clicking so well, and then it kind of started struggling to the point that 1-for-21 in the series. How perplexing was that to you, and was it an X's and O's thing, or was it an execution thing, or a combination of both?
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, February, I think we're number one in the NHL on the power play, and we're clipping along at a real high rate, which we've been. We've been for years. We've been a top power play in the league. Power play, as I had mentioned, was really good in the Tampa series a year ago and helped us in the playoffs. But otherwise, our overall offensive game in the playoffs hasn't met expectations and hasn't delivered for us, hasn't executed. So was it perplexing? We spend a lot of time searching for answers. The fact that it has been good and has come through and has looked elite at times, obviously you go to that and you want to build trust towards that. It's difficult to do when things don't go well. As we were talking with our power play about through the series, especially as we showed the type of resolve that we did later in the series to keep our season alive, to me that came through trust. Players trusting in the plan, going out and executing and giving absolutely everything that they have to execute that plan. And to me, that's why we were able to find our way back in the series. And I think the power play is no different. Like, the skill is there. Throughout this season, we tried different things. We moved different things around. Through the series, we moved things around and tried many different iterations to what the first unit looked like. Some of it by design, some of it because players were in and out of our lineup. But ultimately, it comes down to execution. It comes down to competitiveness, winning little puck battles and winning face-offs, and then trusting it, and staying with it. And that becomes harder to do, as that number starts to grow. But again, the way that the team showed belief in the plan at 5-on-5, needed that to come through in the power play. And frankly, in Game 7, the power play was good in Game 7. They just didn't put the puck over the line, which was the same story in Game 2 and 3. So the big number, if you focus on that, it's not good, and clearly. But there's times there where the process was in place, and the process can work. You got to be able to beat the goaltender ultimately, and that is the missing piece. So that's the hurdle there.
Sheldon, Mitch has taken heat in this market from time to time, perhaps now more than ever. I'm just wondering what you make of that and what he means to this group now and moving forward.
Mitch is an exceptional player and wants to win. He wants to win here in Toronto. And, I think there's things that he did in the series that really helped us have success. Set us up for success, took on some tough roles, really helped stabilize our penalty killing, get our penalty killing going later in the series. There's things that Mitch Marner does, that don't show up on the score sheet that are really important to our team. Obviously, our entire team needs to score more and needs to come through at key times, and that's a big part of it. But as I said, my job as a coach is to help our entire team, including Mitch, to come through in those moments, and I failed to do so, and I'll take responsibility for that. Thank you.
Okay, so there's Sheldon Keefe, the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I think the main takeaway that Maddie, everyone should have from that one is this is a results-oriented business, and I take responsibility for the results not being there for the Toronto Maple Leafs. When he was asked about his future by Terry Koshan, he said, look, essentially, and I'm paraphrasing Sheldon here, he said, look, these decisions are out of my hands and this is above my pay grade, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So nothing too surprising there other than Keefe went out of his way to make sure that it was him that fell on the knife, dove on the grenade, however you want to put it, for the consistent playoff failures for this team. Perhaps chumming the waters for what we may expect later on this week.
Yeah, it really felt like a defeated man at the podium. It really did. And I'm always hesitant to blame coaches because they don't play. I really am. And I actually thought that the adjustments that this team made, especially with Matthews not in the lineup, I didn't think that they could win games 2-1. I really didn't believe that was the
case. Can we pause on that for one second? I think that's a really good point here. The one thing that Sheldon Keefe had been criticized around for a number of years was not making adjustments. And there's one way this Maple Leafs team plays and you keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at, let's just say that this is the end for Sheldon Keefe as head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, as many expect. If this is the end, this is after a performance where Sheldon Keefe actually went out there and did make those adjustments and had the Maple Leafs playing a different way. And got some results and got the team again to a game 7. The game 7 didn't go the way of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and there will be consequences for it. The only thing that I want to point out to is it's not from lack of getting this team to play a different way. You can make the argument too little too late. I'll listen to that. I understand it. But it's not as if Sheldon Keefe said this team can only play one way and that's the way we're going to play.
Yeah.
This is a team that deliberately changed the way that they played after getting down in this series. Anyway,
and he did get
Chris
some
for the mill,
and he did get some buy-in from his players. There were a lot of guys that were down and blocking shots that I did not think that I would see doing such a thing in the playoffs. But having said that, you still got to win the games. If Sheldon Keefe is not the head coach of the Leafs by the end of this week, I don't think a lot of people would be surprised. But at the same time, I do think that this is not Sheldon Keefe's first and last NHL head coaching job. I truly believe that.
Yep. Thought it was interesting when asked about the David Pastrnak goal, where the breakdown was.
Yeah.
And in true coach fashion, wouldn't pin it on one specific person or one specific area. I mean, listen, hockey is a chain of events, and we all know that. But the one area that it did cite was, here comes David Pastrnak, their best player, gathering speed through the neutral zone. It wasn't picked up.
And
that's Marner.
Yeah, didn't get a stick on him. I think that's it's three players breaking down. It's somebody not picking him up in the neutral zone, the defenseman not being aware that he is coming.
That's Morgan Riley.
And the goalie for not even, like, he's like glued to his post. Stick your stick out, man. And a lot of people are saying, well, Joseph Woll is very active. He probably plays that. I don't think you can. Listen, Ilya Samsonov is not why they lost that game. Ilya Samsonov was actually really good in that game. So not blaming him. But
no, but he was sleepy on that play.
On that play, 100%.
You can say the closing sequence, Marner was sleepy, Riley was sleepy, and also Samsonov was sleepy.
I just will never blame a goalie when the team scores one goal.
Oh, sure you can. Of course you can.
I don't, as a general rule.
You're such a coach. You're such an old coach.
I was hard on my goalie.
Were you hard on goalies?
Yeah. My brother was the goalie coach. He's like, you got to relax with the goalies. He's like,
he blew it.
He did. And I don't disagree with that. It's just at the end, we're saying all this stuff, and you know who had no say in all of that? The coach. The guy who's going to fall on the sword, and the guy who's probably not going to, he may not have a job by the end of this week. And then he's going to be the assistant in Pittsburgh.
Or the head coach in New Jersey.
Or the head coach in New Jersey.
We shall see how this goes. What are we doing here with the program, by the way?
I wasn't told if we were going to blow. I don't think we can take a break. We should be able to take a break. Yeah, okay. We can take a break.
Let's hit the bottom of the hour break here. Come back and more on either the Sheldon Keefe presser, Florida Panthers, and the Boston Bruins. We have Galley?
Galley's good to go.
Galley's good to go? Okay, we'll come back with Gary Galley. There we go. Stick around. Gary Galley next on the Florida Panthers and the Boston Bruins. Show continues. Just heard from Sheldon Keefe, head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll shift gears and talk about the Atlantic Division, two remaining teams, Florida Panthers, Boston Bruins. Merrick Show continues. Keep it here.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, welcome back to the program. Thanks for hanging with us there. Well, we brought you the Sheldon Keefe press conference from Toronto. In the meantime, don't forget tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern, it is the Florida Panthers facing off against the Boston Bruins. John Bartlett and my next guest, Gary Galley, with the call in this one. Gary, how are you today, pal? Good to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you too. Doing really well. Getting excited for the second round to get going. Yep. I think, especially in the Eastern Conference, I think some of the teams that were considered maybe the weakest in the playoffs were dismantled and sent home fairly early.
Yeah,
I think that things are going to tighten up quite significantly here now when the second round gets started. The only thing for the teams that have gone seven games, the Dallases and the Bostons, you know, that, as you know, Jeff, you take on considerable more carnage when you do that. It's harder to reload. You know, your coaching staff is looking at two different teams they're planning to play, not just honing in on one, because you don't know who they're going to play if you're Florida, you know, and Colorado. So they're honing in on two different teams. So it kind of makes things a bit crazy, but it'll be fun when the second round gets started.
Let me ask you about Boston. This is curious, and I'm glad you got us there, Gary. I don't want to say this is a guaranteed loss night for the Boston Bruins, but what's their mentality going into this one, coming off an emotional game 7 on Saturday, barely enough time to catch your breath and make lineup decisions. And now here you are against a well-rested, well-oiled machine in the Florida Panthers. I don't think any team goes in there saying, yeah, you know what, we're going to lose this game. This is the guaranteed loss game. But I mean, you've played before. You played in these situations. What's the mentality of the Boston Bruins going into this one?
They're coming in to win. Like, this is a team that's playoff savvy. A team that has been through the trials and tribulations of the playoffs. Some of those guys there were fortunate enough to win a cup. They've had great leadership to follow. I think that this is something that they're not coming in here to ever lose a game. No one ever does. Do you put the slant or slope against them, or do you put it to the other side saying one team has been sitting idle for a lot more time than they'd like to be, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And one team is coming off an emotionally charged thing. Their adrenaline's still flowing. they're glad to be here, and they just want to, they're just going to keep going, where the other team has to kind of catch up to that intensity maybe. So all these things are things that I'm going to be looking at as the game gets started. Also, you know, it was a more physical series, the Toronto-Boston series, than you would think. I mean, you look at the hits that were that Pastrnak had to take, especially the one by Edmondson there. But I just think there's always carnage. Yeah. You never know what it is because, you know, the lips are tight at this time of year.
Sure.
But it's always like you've got to rest, you've got to reload, you got to reset, and then you got to repeat. Mm. And you got to do that four times to win a Stanley Cup. And it gets harder every time you have to do it.
I want to welcome back listeners on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, in conversation with Gary Galley, one half of the play-by-play tandem that is Galley and Bartlett tonight. It's game one. The Florida Panthers facing off against the Boston Bruins. Let me ask you about someone who may not get a lot of headlines outside of Florida. I mean, hardcore hockey fans know the name. Maybe one of the best waiver claims we've seen in recent memory by any team in the NHL. Good on Bill Zito for picking up Gustav Forsling. Now, Forsling's not going to win the Norris Trophy, but he's going to get some votes. He's been a revelation. He's been on a number of different teams before. He's really found a home with the Florida Panthers. When you look at this Panthers team, there's always going to be like the headline players, Barkov and Tkachuk and Aaron Ekblad and Brandon Montour, Sergei Bobrovsky, etc. How do you see Gustav Forsling's game? Because I'll tell you, Gary had a tremendous season and carried that right into that series against Tampa.
Yeah, I think anytime you are going to win a Stanley Cup, you have to look at your lineup in training camp and you got to say, okay, are we slotted in the right areas? Is our number three defenseman a real number three defenseman? Is our number four a real number four? And so on and so forth. Do we have a number one? Do we have two twos? You know, teams, you know, generate this analytics as to what they have and what they need. And the one thing teams do need and come playoff time, and you know this, is depth, and especially on defense. If you lose key members of your defense corps for periods of time, if you don't have guys that could step in and get the job done, it gets really difficult. So when you pick up a guy like Forsling and he comes into your lineup and he finds his niche and his place and he just brings it, and he's a gamer, coaches love gamers. Coaches love to look down their bench and see that this guy, they look at him, they see the back of his sweater and his number, and they go, don't have to worry about that guy. I know what I'm getting every that guy. Now, 95% of the nights are exactly the same. He may have a few off. He may have 2 or 3% off. He may have 2 or 3% that goes over the top. But at the end of the day, 90 to 95% of the games, you're going to get Forsling the way you expect him. And that's good enough for the Florida Panthers. And I think it's a real plus for them. You know, I look back on the teams that I played on, and, you know, in Boston, we had Bork and we had Wesley. But then after those guys, you know, it was Don Sweeney and it was myself. And it was guys that came into the lineup that played in those 3, 4, 5 slots that really have got to get the job done and make sure that you're not allowing goals against. You're playing tight to the vest and let those other guys, you know, go out and get what they've got to get done. So Forsling covers a lot of those areas. Mm-hmm. And I believe he's a real plus for them for sure.
Gary, I don't know how good you are at translating Finnish last names, but I was surprised to find out that Barkov translated as Bergeron in the English. And as Bergeron is no longer in the NHL, it seems as if the Selke trophy is right there for Alexander Barkov. For the longest time, he's been considered, you know, like the player's player, the one that the players look at and say, like, that guy is amazing. I mean, players used to talk about this, like Marian Hossa, you know, the player's player, the guys that play, they know how great they are. Do you have a thought on what it must be like? And if you're the Boston Bruins tonight, you know, you're playing against Alexander Barkov and you're probably having the same feeling that other teams did playing against Patrice Bergeron. Your thoughts on the passing of the torch from Bergeron to Barkov here?
Yeah, there's no doubt that, you know, Barkov is a guy that a few years ago, I don't know if you remember, but there was some really concern in Florida that he was fed up of losing. He was fed up of not getting into the playoffs. He wanted change.
Yep.
And he went to the organization, and I believe, you know, I'm not in the office, but I'm assuming that it went something like this. We got to make some changes, and we got to make them quickly because I'm not sticking around for this if we're not. And they did. They anteed in, and they did. And he anteed in as well. And he wanted to play in important games in April and May and hopefully into June. And now he's done that. And it's amazing when you hear him talk now and people are interviewing him and they say, oh, you know, you guys, you know, do you think you're the favorite or do you, what do you think of Boston? And you beat them last year. He doesn't bite on anything. He goes, we know who we are. We know how we play. And that's what we're going to do. And we're going to outcompete the people we're playing against. That's how you win in the playoffs. And that's what we do. That's what we do here. So now there's a culture now here. He's a big part of it. And to have your star, like the Kopitars, like the Bergerons, that play that 200-foot game. And there's a lot of other guys I'd throw in here, too, that are very good at it. But you throw them into that mix, and you see how strong they are and how much of the ice they control. And especially in a playoff game, it's huge. I mean, he's such a big factor for the Florida Panthers. And you look at the year Reinhardt's having. I don't care. It's like Hyman and Edmonton. You don't have numbers like that unless you're not playing with a guy who distributes the puck and puck possessions the puck as and as good a passer as he is, a guy like Barkov. Now, you brought up Bergeron. You know, the Bruins are under 45% faceoffs in the playoffs. They're struggling a little bit in the faceoff circle. They were getting more possession. No, Bergeron, they're not getting that anymore. So they've got to kind of dig down deep in the faceoff circle and try to get more possession off their draws. But those guys are such catalysts to the success of a team winning. And it's so important. And he just reminds me, he's the Kopitar of the East, that big rangy body that burrows up through the ice and doesn't have to go toe drag here. And he just goes through you. He's coming through you. He's big and strong. I love watching.
We look at this matchup and we just, you know, considering what, you know, the Florida Panthers just did to the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Boston Bruins were just stretched by the Toronto Maple Leafs to seven games. And I think we wonder if Boston is going to do this, how can they do this? Like, you look at the Florida Panthers, go through all up front, blue line, net mining, check, check, check. I know there's an issue with Sam Bennett and that injury, but still. Gary, I'm curious, if Boston is going to do this, how are they going to do this?
Well, you know what? It's incredible because, you know, both teams had really good seasons. They only finished a point apart from each other. Boston has gone through a significant metamorphosis after losing Krejci and Bergeron.
Yep.
You know, they brought in new people. They seem to have gotten through that during the course of the year. Both teams have very established, good, solid goaltending. Certainly there's some scar tissue in Boston with the goaltending last year in the playoffs, where they had to go to Swayman in game 7 of this series against Florida, which they lost. So there's some scar tissue there for Boston. But at the end of the day, you know, they're good on special teams, both these teams. They're good 5-on-5. I think, you know, the bruteness and the bulliness of the Florida Panthers, certainly I give them the edge in the physicality side of things, but only if they're able to keep their penalty minutes down. And they've shown that they can do that. That's something they've learned. Last year in the Stanley Cup Finals, they took games early in the series to send messages where you can't send messages in a Stanley Cup Final. That's too late to be sending. Every game matters. And so I think they've learned that moving into here. So the physicality part, how Boston handles that kind of bullying of the that Florida likes to play, but Boston doesn't shy away from it. They've been there. So I do believe there are more similarities to these two teams than there are differences. The only thing, and we touched on this at the very start, Jeff, is how much carnage came out of the Toronto series.
Yep.
For Boston compared to Florida, how much rest is going to be important. We may not see that in the first two games. It might not show up till games, you know, 3, 4, 5 and on, right?
Yep.
So Boston may be able to handle that, but I think that's going to be a question we'll have to look at. But I think this series is a lot closer. Obviously, goaltending is going to be the big thing. Mm-hmm. You know, Bob is somebody that, you know, he didn't have sparkling numbers in the series versus Tampa. I think he was under a .900 save percentage. But what he did do was the timing of his saves were impeccable. They were brilliant, the timing of his saves. And that's what Grant Fuhr will tell you, too. All the goals, I let in goals sometimes.
Nah.
But when the time was there, I made the saves when they had to be made.
Yep.
And why Wayne Gretzky says, if I had to have one goalie in my net, it'd be Grant Fuhr in a one-game win all. So Bobrovsky has certainly shown that. Allmark and Swayman, they had that little bit of a platooning early in the first round. It didn't seem to work out. They went with Swayman. He has a brilliant .950 save percentage coming out of the first round. So if he can continue taking that with him into this series, you know, your team can have a slow start. Your goaltender can't. If your goaltender is good at the beginning He may be able to get your mate till the team gets their legs moving after a long series. So it's going to be really important tonight that whoever plays, because Allmark is 3-0 versus Florida this year. So does Montgomery go back to Allmark? Does he go to Swayman? It's hard to know what the goaltending is in Boston, but to me, it's obviously Swayman is the guy that got them here, and I think they'll go with him starting game one.
We'll be tuned in to find out. Gary, thorough as always. Thanks as always for stopping by. Enjoy the game tonight.
Awesome. Enjoy it as well. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yep.
It should be a good series.
This one should be good old school hockey. There he is, Gary Galley, analyst for Hockey Night in Canada. Tonight it is game one, Florida Panthers facing off against the Boston Bruins. Matty, just to put a sort of bow on the show today and a bow on the first round. This was the first round that had a lot of five-game series, and this is the first round that didn't have any upsets. Now, you can make the argument that in the Western Conference, maybe LA beating Edmonton would have been the only upsets.
Mm-hmm.
But still, this was the first round where we didn't see upsets at all.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe make the argument, does Dallas beating Vegas, is that an upset? Well, not if you look at the standings.
That's a coin toss.
Defending Stanley Cup champions. So this wasn't the first round that we're, used to. Normally we're used to first rounds with long series, and I'll be blunt, a lot of teams and a lot of players doing dumb things that bleeds into, you know, controversy and at times suspensions and more interest. It's kind of it was okay first round.
Yeah.
Nothing great, other than maybe the way the Dallas Stars turned things around and handled the defending Stanley Cup champions.
Yeah, I look at it. The other thing, too, is a lot of low-scoring games, which we did not have in the first round last year.
By the end, there were a lot of low-scoring
games. Yeah, the first round, it was like, baby, bet the over. Like that was like every single night. But teams tightened up defensively. Yeah. I will say this. If because we know that the hockey gets really sloppy as the playoffs go on. Guys are tired. They're hurt.
Sure.
All of that. If it means the first round was just mediocre because we're going to get a really good second round based on these matchups, outside of maybe Boston and Florida, I'm really looking forward to it then.
That might even surprise you.
And it might.
That might even.
Jeremy Swayman could stand on his head and we're going, oh boy, look at the Bruins.
Yeah, it might. Like I look at the first round and go, meh, mid.
Yeah,
I got that from Shayna.
I was gonna say you're of a different age
but
to be using
this
that.
Second round looks good,
and I'm hoping that the appetizer was you're kind of just like okay
Dallas,
the appetizer is all right, but
Colorado,
the main is like wow.
Dallas, Colorado, give me some of that. Vancouver, Edmonton, give me some of that. We've already seen the first game between Carolina and New York.
You just like Edmonton and Vancouver because of the Twitter wars.
You don't.
I do, but...
By the way, it's already offside. There's already a whole lot of stupid online.
Yeah, I've seen some
things. And we're giving
them
extra time before game one even starts, just to be dumber.
Yeah. Fine.
Should we have a segment on the show?
Twitter dumb?
About the
Twitter D and
Twitter
dumb?
Twitter hostility between Vancouver and Edmonton, which we're already seeing. All right, thanks to Gary Galley for stopping by. Thanks to Dan Murphy from the NHL on Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada, and Elliot Friedman kicked it off. Thanks to our crew, Matt Marchese, Lance Kennedy, Jen Rolnick, and Jake Schultz. Thank you. Enjoy the game tonight. Florida Panthers and the Boston Bruins back in 22 hours here across the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcast. TJMS back tomorrow. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll talk to you.